It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests, bow your heads as the Lord's mention.
Welcome to Bauer and Pollock. I'm John Pollock, which means you are Court Bauer.
Am I? Okay.
Are you doing okay?
I'm just fine. I'm having a delicious Mexican Coca-Cola, so it doesn't get any better than pure sugar late in the afternoon as we record this.
Well, there you go. That's the difference between you and I. You are having a Mexican Coke, and I am having a bottle of water.
Yeah. Trust me, it's not that surprising if you looked at the two of us compared to each other.
Where to even begin this week, Court? I guess we can start with one Roman Reigns, who it was announced on Tuesday had failed a drug test under the WWE's wellness policy. He has been, this is one of the more unique suspensions, not just because of the level of star involved, but it is a 30-day suspension where an angle was shot the night before. Right. Not to write him off, but rather keep him involved in storylines for the next month because he is still advertised for Battleground, which he is eligible to work, but will not be able to appear on any of the television. And as one of those infamous writers, Court, that would have to be told, hey, this guy isn't going to be around for a month. Figure it out. This had to have been quite the shock to the creative team when they first heard about this.
It is, because you are getting thrown so much right now with the brand split, with trying to reconfigure two rosters and your plans, your long-term plans, and now you've lost Roman Reigns and you have to do the hot potato with the belt. Now you look at, okay, well, what's going to transpire at Battleground? And it would appear that everything's staying intact per the SmackDown tapings that will air, already aired by the time a lot of people have been listening to the show. So
I've seen it in Canada because we get it a night earlier. And yeah, he's still on all the graphics. Mm-hmm. They kept plugging the main event, and Roman Reigns was there prominently mentioned, obviously not there physically.
Yeah. So they're going to stay the course. We're going to get that triple threat, which to me is not the organic build unless you're going to split up the Shield members and put them on two different rosters, which
I think they will be,
you know, so that's why you do the match now. And on the flip side of that match, I'm interested to see what direction they go in with Roman Reigns, who right now more than ever is so ready for a heel run. But I mean, we can say that until blue in the face. I thought that the way they designed the promo on Monday night where Dean Ambrose kind of buried him, was like, hey, I would have cashed on you, no problem. Like, I just like, wow, they didn't position Roman as the biggest, toughest guy in the room, which is what Vince always does for that big baby face guy, Hulk, Austin, Cena, Roman Reigns. So it's just interesting, and we'll see how this one develops, because I think it's a little harder now to push him as your top baby face coming off of a violation, but maybe I'm naive, and that exists in outer space, in the casual fan space. It's irrelevant, and no one's going to be aware of it. No one's going to care about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too sensitive. It's hard to know.
It's also, I mean, one of the things with the WWE wellness policy is that they do make the announcement of the performer in question, but not the substance in which they tested positive for, nor do we know much beyond what Roman posted, which was an apology, essentially, for it happening. But we don't know what the circumstances were. I mean, I think of the fact that we had two cases in mixed martial arts where two fighters in Yoel Romero and later Tim Means, who both tested positive under the USADA policy, and they gave the tainted supplement defense, which most people groan at. But in both cases, they were able to produce part of the supplement. USADA tested it, and there was a banned substance in there that was not on the bottle, that was not labeled, and therefore they got reduced suspensions as a result of it. And I'm not saying that's the case with Roman. It's just there's so many different possibilities of what happened. And you see this guy condemned, and maybe it's completely warranted. Maybe he just blatantly took something and he got caught. But maybe there's a story there, and we don't know. And I think if you are Roman Reigns and you do have a logical defense, I would think you would want to voice that publicly.
Yeah, but it's also has to get approved by Vince. And what does Vince want out of this? Does he just want it to be something where he does his time and comes back and we don't shine a light on it and we don't address it and it's behind us? Or do you want him to be accountable in the public domain and continue the conversation? I would think Vince would probably, knowing Vince, would just move forward and not make it into a thing. And if Roman's smart, he would probably – want the chairman's blessing before he did anything publicly, because you got to be careful. This is a very sensitive thing. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Roman Reigns probably will go silent for 30 days, and not a bad time to take a vacation. It's the summer, and come back for a pay-per-view and onward and upward possibly for him. So, you know, the other thing is when you're a top guy in his position, you are running hard. And so a 30-day siesta, well, obviously not ideal. Class is half full. Well, you get a 30-day vacation. But now you have one strike.
Do you feel that there's any faith that is lost in this guy? Because you could certainly argue this guy was in a much higher position than even a Randy Orton was or a Jeff Hardy. Those would be the most high-profile guys that had ever failed a wellness test. And in Randy Orton's case, more than one.
Yeah.
You know, this guy was positioned as, you know, quote unquote, the guy for years to come after this. Is this just a bump in the road?
I think it's a bump in the road. I mean, you're just to give some perspective, not that Rob Van Dam was the guy, but he was the face of.
Yeah, that was another big one.
He was the face of the brand extension in 2006, actually June of 2006, 10 years ago this month, basically, is when it went down, where he was driving down the road with Sabu, Cheech and Chong style, with a lot of weed, some bongs, some who the hell knows what, and got pulled over, and they got arrested, and he had just won the WWE title, had spun off the ECW title from it, and was the face of this reboot of ECW, and that to me is really your worst case scenario, and you have to change courses, and WWE very quickly did. In this case, I think it's a bump in the road. Yes, Roman Reigns is the face of the company. He is, you know, right now slotted as the face of the company. But if you look at the last several months since he's had the title, he's kind of on and off had the title since November, December. How's the business been? Where are the ratings? Well, that hasn't changed the course of the ratings going down. How has it impacted the house shows? Are they doing well in the house shows? No, they're down. Is he a phenomenon when it comes to merchandise sales? Is he a real driver in that category? He is not. So in all the measurements that Vince McMahon looks at personally and how you see a guy, you know, growing and is this going in the right direction, it's not. This is coming after a correction. They thought they were making a correction after WrestleMania 31 in San Jose. Did you just wipe out? What happened to you?
I unplugged my headphones.
Wow. That's very loud.
I'm back.
Very unprofessional.
But you were disgusting.
I thought you just...
Numbers have not been great.
I just thought you went into a coma.
I was nodding off there.
Sorry. Yeah, numbers haven't been good across the board. So where does this leave Roman Reigns? I don't know, but I don't think it's like he's going to come back and be mid-card material. Is he going to be the guy? Well, I don't know. The next 30 days for Dean Ambrose is going to be very interesting to see how it does for him.
And with two rosters, I mean, this guy cannot come back and be anything but a main event.
Of course.
With the split, I mean, he's needed more than ever. I mean, it was – you know, this is going to still be, in my opinion, the John Cena squad and the Roman Reigns squad. Certainly, I think you do want a lot of support around the Roman Reigns brand, but he certainly is going to be a focal point coming back, or else he would not be in this main event, I think would be the perfect example. I mean, they're going out of their way to keep this guy on a show where he won't be on any of the television, nor was there an angle to write him off.
Right. Yeah. No, and, yeah, like you said, they're going to have roster issues coming up, and you don't want to panic too. It's the first offense. It wasn't the RVD scenario. we'll see what happens with this guy. But in the first week or first Monday Night Raw with the Dean Ambrose championship era underway, ratings were up like 17%. So, you know, a title switch will do that, and one that was controversial with Money in the Bank and everything getting cashed in. I would understand that. Plus, you didn't have the NBA Finals. So if you're going to get a little boost, I think that combination's why. We'll see in week two and three how he performs and how they book him and present him, because you look at Dean Ambrose in February where he lost to Triple H. Great match, but he lost on that network special. And then Brock Lesnar basically ragdolled him at WrestleMania. Then he has this hokey match with Jericho, which didn't do anyone any favors. So it's like the rehab didn't even really work so well. But here he is, and he's on top of the world. So, I mean, if everything happens overnight, sometimes you can get someone hot very quickly if you execute it right. Can they keep him hot? Can he grow? Can he be a viable champion? And will Vince look at this guy as a real differently than maybe he did 4 or 5 months ago? The next few weeks are going to be critical for the future for Dean Ambrose.
Yeah, and I think he'll certainly benefit Cord over, you know, unfortunate or not, the fact that Roman Reigns is gone, you're forced to put Dean Ambrose in that key babyface role. He doesn't have to share that role with Roman Reigns on television. Everything will be built around him on television. I thought this past Monday, I thought he got a very good reaction, but I didn't see him, you know, this overwhelming presence as that champion and feeling like the top babyface. Right. But as you said, numbers got a nice spike this week. It's certainly, I think people are looking at this as a refreshing change with a new guy. But as you outlined, they have their work ahead of them just based on the fact of how he's been handled this year and where he's cooled off from a year ago.
Absolutely. So we'll see where that goes. Battleground's taking shape. I still don't understand the flag concept. I'm waiting for the Wei Ting and John Pollock flag to enter into one of these spots. I think that would be a nice twist on this.
Well, I think it's actually going to turn out to be a game of Risk, that they're all going to sit down and play a board game to determine the champion.
You'd think the New Day would have a great flag with the unicorn, the rainbow, and everything. They have like the best signage of all the different groups right now. So
maybe the Vaudevillains will come in on horseback.
They need something.
With Eric Bischoff and his Buffalo Cody beer logo. Lots of integration for this one of possibly many, many, many pay-per-view specials before the end of the year, Court.
Yes.
Because we have this mock schedule that has surfaced online that's listing the pay-per-view schedule for the rest of the year, which the WWE has yet to confirm is all complete and accurate. But if we're going off what Jerry Lawler had said a few weeks ago when he was asked about this, this is consistent with what he had stated, where it would be dual pay-per-views from each brand beginning in September and 7 p.m. start times for SummerSlam and Survivor Series, meaning on those nights with the kickoff, we're talking about 5 hours of WWE shows to go into 3 hours of Raw and 2 on SmackDown on Tuesday nights. So my goodness, Court, get ready for some engagement with your WWE Network subscription, because they are going to exhaust the live content before the end of the year.
Are you excited about Clash of Champions? Not Clash of the Champions, but Clash of Champions coming technically back this September.
Maybe they didn't get the full trademark.
God damn, why do you need the in there? They know. They're champions. So say champions. Terrible Vince. Greeny does a way better Vince. But yeah, they're bringing back some of those old concepts, and you're looking at that pay-per-view schedule, and there's 2 in September, 2 in October, 2 in December, and the time in between them, it's like just – you know, in some cases, less than 14 days. I was like, oh my God, it's a lot. It's a lot to digest. There's already 3 hours on Monday night, 2 hours on Tuesday night, an hour of NXT on Wednesday night, assuming you don't watch Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, TNA, and you just watch those products. And there's also Superstars. There's so much stuff. It's like, it's exhausting just trying to remember everything. And I think if you look at just for, someone to stumble into WWE's product, curious about it, but looking at what you really have to get invested in and time commitment and everything, there's like a wall that's going up, and it's going to be very hard, I think, for people to just stumble into it and be able to keep up with it. I mean, you can fall off very quickly. I mean, they do present their programming in a very disposable way where you can miss half a show and they'll recap it almost after every commercial break when they come back. Like, if you missed it, here's everything that you missed. So I guess in that way, that's how they try to address it. But – There's a lot of content, a lot of programming. There's also the NXT specials. And yep. And so you add that into the equation along with other stuff. It's
the Cruiserweight Classic. I mean, that's going to be an extra hour beginning July 13th and going right through September. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the one sense, I feel that they know that it's their live programming on the network that does the most viewership, and they want to ramp up as much content as possible. My question would be, with the ramp up of all of this, are you attracting new subscribers or merely satisfying your existing fan base that they can't get enough? They welcome more shows. I think it's a very difficult time to be growing your fan base and attracting new people unless you're talking about going into new markets for the first time, expanding in places like China. But when it comes domestically, I think we're at a point where it's so insurmountable to even fathom jumping on board now and becoming a regular WWE viewer.
It is. I mean, when I grew up, you had an hour of WWF on a Saturday. If you found it, an hour on Sunday with WWF Wrestling Challenge or something. And then if you found TBS, okay, then you had 605. This is so much more. And I mean, that's for a casual fan. If you want to even throw in like, oh, there's New Japan World and all this other stuff, it is a lot to digest. And at the other end, it's great to see WWE doing these things like the World Cruiserweight Classic, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. But it's just trying to keep up with everything. And that's here's what you're going to look at this. Look at it this way. You have the G1 starting in August or July, actually. You have the World Cruiserweight Classic starting in July, right? And you have SmackDown that's actually you're going to have to keep up with now because it's a split roster. That's starting in July. It's a lot of stuff just between that.
This is frightening. I mean, this is frightening. That SummerSlam weekend is just between the J Cup and UFC
right.
202 and TakeOver.
Yep.
It's amazing the amount of stuff that's happening. And I mean, in the one sense, all those things you just listed and I added, it's all high quality stuff when you throw it in there. I mean, it's not like this is just throwaway stuff. I mean, you want to be able to watch as much of this as you can. And sometimes it's just simply finding the available hours to do so. One thing to note is that on this schedule, we should probably know at least one of these by this weekend, because the Hell in a Cell show is listed here for October 30th in Boston at the TD Garden, which is where the WWE is running a house show on Friday night. And presumably they would be announcing their return date, which would be that Raw branded show. And maybe they'll rename it Hell in Cell just to keep consistent.
When I was there, there was a bit of confusion. Hell in a Cell or Hell in the Cell?
Yes.
And it became like this big weird thing, and everyone had a different strong opinion on it. And we're like, well, what the fuck is going on? Do we know? And we realized that we had been calling it different things, and it's just that's what happens. But that's why Vince is so specific and adamant, and people think it's like an OCD thing, and it probably is. But to be that adamant, we got to make sure we're consistent. If it's Clash of Champions, it's always Clash of Champions. If it is the Monday Night War singular, then everyone's got to be consistent. I get that. But it's just so.
No, I don't think that's OCD at all, because I would be the same about consistency across the board. And I think you need that. So I don't think that's a weird quirk at all. Anyway, let's talk about the Cruiserweight Classic, because by the time you're listening to this, the first night has probably already been taped at this point. They announced this week Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan are calling the tournament. Right. It kicks off July 13th. They're very much going very sports heavy with this tournament, right down to weigh-ins, Court. I mean, this is nuts.
I love the weigh-ins. They were on Facebook Live, and people were making weight. I understand there was an issue with one of the guys. And, it's a cool thing. I'm curious to see.
Did they do the earlier weigh-ins, and then much like USADA has been pushing for, and that many commissions have been introducing, so that they have more time to rehydrate before Thursday night?
Unfortunately, they don't follow that right now. It was a little bit, I think, I don't know when they hatched the idea, but it was a few days before, and we're going to do these weigh-ins, so make sure that you're coming in at 205 or under. And a lot of those guys are smaller, but there was one or two guys that were a little bigger. And it does add something to it. I like that's a bit sport driven. I'm curious to see how Daniel Bryan does coming back, and they showed pictures of him in Orlando. You see him at the facility with Shinsuke Nakamura, et cetera. And You know, it's got to be still a hard process for him. Now he's had some time away. He's coming back. And now he's going to be immersed in this over the summer. And how is he going to feel about this? How comfortable is he going to be? He did cancel the farewell night at Madison Square Garden or whatever they were calling it. And that's a hard thing to turn down. But at the same time, I think he realized he needed a clean cut. Now he's back, and it hasn't even been 90 days, I think. So here we are, and he's back in the mix, classic wrestling scenario. But you know, it adds credibility. It's an intriguing twist on the tournament. There's star power now attached with Daniel Bryan. Ooh, I think there's curiosity. Oh, Daniel Bryan's back. This is his first time he's come back since the retirement. And but at the same time, I'm thinking Daniel Bryan and looking at all of the talent on that roster, and I'm thinking, man, I would have loved to have seen Shinsuke versus Daniel Bryan. I'm sure he would have loved to have done it. There's so much potential, but at the same time, you know, I'm glad he did retire for the reasons he did. Mauro in this role will be great. I think he'll thrive. He's gonna be anchoring this because obviously Daniel Bryan is not what I would call a natural in that position, but I think he can give you great insight and credibility. I'm curious to see how he handles it. The cool thing is they're going to be able to sweeten it in post-production, which is important for someone in his position.
Yeah, it's going to be a number of weeks before we see the first episode. I'm curious to see how they do, because when they were first talking about the idea of Daniel Bryan becoming a commentator after, I thought, A, Mauro would be the best person to pair him with, and even more so than SmackDown, for instance. This seems like a product, and the way they appear to be positioning this show and presenting in that much more sports-like feel, that it will be a more natural transition for Daniel Bryan, and to him, you know, sharing anecdotes and stories about a number of these guys that he's worked with in the past. I think it could be really good, but certainly the jury's out on how Daniel Bryan will do in a color role. But I think this is his best avenue for success, given all the circumstances and who he's working with and what he's called.
Yeah, I think so. And again, it'll get over this cruiserweight tournament big time. What do you think is at the end of the road for this series of cruiserweight matches? Are we getting a champion, a trophy? What do you see at the end of this, and where do you see that road ending up? SummerSlam, NXT TakeOver, a Raw show, a SmackDown show? Where does the Cruiserweight title, if one returns, comes back? It seems kind of pointless to do this unless they're bringing back the division. But where does that division end up?
Well, I think that, you know, with 32 guys, they're not signing 32 guys. But I think much like Tough Enough, they're going to take a look at the standouts. And I would expect 10 to 15 signings out of this. I think that's pretty realistic. And this will probably stock up the NXT roster, which is probably going to go through a significant facelift over the next couple of months, and feeding those two main rosters, that this talent is going to get that television exposure and make a natural segue onto NXT. I think it would be a big waste of an opportunity when this is going to be following NXT every week, and then so many of these faces are just, they disappear and they're never to be heard from after this tournament wraps up in September. So I would imagine that, you know, your final 8 to 10, I would almost guarantee that they're going to get signed here. What the winner gets, I don't know if they necessarily need a cruiserweight title. As much as this tournament reflects such a change in philosophy, I think it's a term that's been so hurt by the WWE's promotion of it in the past that I was even surprised they used the word cruiserweight for this cruiserweight classic, and using a term that the WWE audience has been so conditioned to look at as inferior. So this looks as much as a revamp of what cruiserweights are to this generation of wrestling fans in WWE.
Well, to your point, it has been a generation since all the good and the bad happened with the cruiserweight division. It's been a long time since they've had a cruiserweight division. So this is an opportunity to a new generation of fans, and fans have been dying for a real deal cruiserweight division, to have that and get that bad taste out of their mouth, or get hot for a product they've never been aware of in the WWE. By having this cruiserweight series, and you can really showcase and spotlight these guys and that style and make it feel good. I don't see the point of this unless they do bring back the division. And you can come out of this with a lot of momentum, a lot of unique matchups, some great new rivalries because of how things played out, because of the tournament. And it can really, I mean, if it's like, if just end up with the end result, if you guys get signed and you put them in the mid card, I think it's just it's counterintuitive to what why you embarked on this in the first place. And just talk a little bit about the structure. They're going to actually have alternates for this, kind of like the MMA old tournaments I remember back in the day. You always had alternates and stuff. And so freelance wrestling champion Mustafa Ali is replacing Brazilian talent Zumbi, who's out. And I understand Mustafa Ali. I haven't seen his work, but I understand he does a lot in the Ohio area and is very good.
I hope he was on weight.
Hey, you gotta make sure on weight. I'm drinking this Mexican Coca-Cola. I am definitely not on weight. But you know, this series has created a great opportunity for so many. The brand split has created a lot of opportunity for many, including Roderick Strong, who forever was connected with Ring of Honor. Sure, he did it a little bit in TNA, but he's someone that in the last 2 years has done amazing work and is really in his early 30s matured into a first-class, all-around great wrestler, and I think will be really, really well-received when he enters the WWE universe, whether it's NXT, the main roster. Who's to say, who's to know at this point, but when he does come in, I think it's going to be a great thing. And it's something that he's been hunting for desperate. He wanted to be in New Japan. He wanted to get that big shot when he was in TNA. And frankly, I know he wanted to do more in Ring of Honor, but they just didn't book him in a position to do more. But he made the most out of what he was given, which is all you can ask for. So he's taken the next step, and it's so nice to see a guy like Roderick Strong, who I think if we were talking about this, what, 2007, Roderick Strong and WWE? No way. Same with AJ Styles. But it's so great to see these guys are very talented. They have so much to give, and fans are going to love them. End up on the big show. Not literally the wrestler, but maybe that will happen at the Royal Rumble or something. And as for other guys and their coming and going, there's nothing to the rumor about Natalya, Natty, Neidhart, leaving WWE or anything happening there. She's very... very good to go over there. Nothing's changing. Nothing. I mean, there was a weird rumor earlier in the week. As for Moose, who is a Ring of Honor talent that there's a lot of speculation about where he could end up. He had recently taken to social media to talk about his time, quote unquote, visiting friends in Orlando. It wouldn't surprise me to see him end up somewhere else. And where that is and when that is, we'll see. You know, he's right now still technically a free agent. He could end up in many places. Could he end up in Japan? Sure. Could he end up in Lucha Underground? Sure. Could he end up back in Ring of Honor? It's definitely a possibility. Could he end up going to WWE? Yes, but we'll see how it plays out. I would say I would categorize Moose as a fluid situation right now.
Yeah, you look at the marketplace at this moment, and I mean, for whatever fans want to say about the brand split, there is no denying what it has done to the industry where talent is in such high demand, because not only are they trying to fill out three rosters in the WWE, but all these other promotions, they need to stack up their rosters. And if you're a talent with experience that's got any kind of buzz attached to you, your phone is probably going to be ringing. Mm-hmm. And it's a great time for performers.
It's a great time for performers. It's a great time to be someone in the business that has the ability to connect WWE to talent. It's a great time to be a veteran who maybe could be a player slash coach and get in there and contribute, because I look at what's going to happen with the brand split. They're going to have a lot of the agents now. They're going to be spread thin, so they're going to be hiring new agents, bringing agents from Florida to the main roster, because they're going to be doing split tours and needing more manpower, because NXT is going to ramp up their schedule and do more tours. So you're just going to be stretched thin, and you know, you're going to want a bigger list of agents on all these teams. And I look at some of the guys they've hired. They have great guys. I mean, Norman Smiley, terrific trainer. I hope he's able to still stay down in Orlando as much as he could contribute, you know, touring and everything. He's so good in his role, especially with young kids. He's very reassuring. He comforts them and gives them their confidence. And he was part of the old Dusty system. And I think there's a lot of positives that came from that that culture that Dusty had going on down in Orlando. I'd like to see a guy like Jerry Lynn someone that AJ Styles talked about in the Stone Cold podcast on Monday night. I'd like to see him enter the conversation as an agent because he has so much to give. He has such a great mind for the business. You know, it's a sad thing, you know, because, you know, his back and everything, he had a, you know, hard end to his career. He really has earned the right to have an opportunity to contribute at a different level. And I think, in terms of laying out matches, finishes, he's just so polished and understands, and he's a great teacher. Having worked with him, been around him, I can speak to his contributions. He would be a very positive addition. And anyone that's been around him from, the indies to TNA, they always speak so highly of him. He's a really great ad, and I would highly recommend WWE reach out to him because he'd be a great get. So there's going to be opportunities for even maybe guys like that. I hope for Jerry Lynn. I mean.
Well, look at the direct involvement he had in the mid-2000s with TNA and then that late 2000s run in Ring of Honor. The talent he was working with and serving as an agent at that time, that is your NXT and WWE main roster. Those talents, the Tyler Blacks, the AJ Styles, and the list goes on and on and on that he worked with directly, that is now the WWE roster. I think he would be a tremendous addition because he understands the style that they were working and the style that is very much in vogue at this point and can work with so many different generations. I think he's certainly a guy that would be an asset, I feel, at this point in time when the WWE is moving in this direction. And he was someone that I thought was ahead of that curve 15 years ago.
He was. And I think he would be just a terrific get. And another guy we should bring up, and you can expand on this, is Kurt Angle. He has gone public recently confirming he has had talks with Paul Levesque, a.k.a.
Was that a smart move on Kurt Angle's part to publicly discuss that he's having discussions with the WWE?
I think it's never strategically advantageous to put anything out there until you're signed and they're putting you out there and they want to put you out there. It's just not – before you have something signed, sealed, delivered, it's ill-advised. I mean, and someone in his position who's not a young guy should be savvy enough to do that. But for whatever reason, he wanted to share, so he shared. And
because I think his thinking was you throw this out there and the audience is just going to demand that Kurt Angle come in.
Mm-hmm.
When the WWE side of things, if they're going to bring back a Kurt Angle – they probably want that surprise return. I don't think – because he's legitimately somebody that I don't think many expected the WWE would touch after he left a decade ago. And certainly there's a we've talked about it on this show. There are many different ways you can utilize this guy. It's 20 years after he won that Olympic gold medal during an Olympic year with the games coming up in Rio this summer. There are numerous tie-ins from American Alpha to – different involvement on the main roster. There is the Hall of Fame option. We have discussed how you don't have a plethora of guys that you can have in that Hall of Fame spot. He is certainly one of them. It makes a ton of sense on paper to bring in Kurt Angle, but I question why you would want to make those talks so public unless something is already signed.
Or the other times I've seen guys do that is when you have momentum and it stalls out and you're like, wait, they're not emailing me back, they're calling my agent, what the hell, maybe I should put it out there and put some pressure on them. I'm not saying that happened to Kurt or you know, whatever. I'm just saying I've seen that happen in the past, and that seldom helps either. With Kurt, if something does come to fruition, I'll be interested to see how they utilize him. I'd be very interested to see how they utilize him. Because you know, he is a very talented guy, but I do have reservations because of his the damage that's been done over the years, predating turning pro, quote unquote, and his time in the Olympics, and the totality of that damage on his back, his spine, his neck. And when we just passed the anniversary of the tragic passing of Mitsuharu Misawa, and the damage done over the years, and the wear and tear from the matches he had in All Japan and Noah. And I just think about Kurt in the ring. I'm not personally thrilled with that. I don't want to be a buzzkill, but it makes me cringe.
there was a weird story that came out. Well, not so much a weird story, but he hasn't really talked about this very much in depth. And that's Dwayne Johnson, who was on the new UFC podcast with Matt Serra and Jim Norton. And in the past, Johnson had stated, you know, he had contemplated MMA at some points. We know he's a massive follower of mixed martial arts, but he went in depth here talking to them that a decade ago, so this is only 2005 he's talking about, he would have been 34 years old at the time. And he thought his movie career was not really taking off to the level he thought it would, and considered going into mixed martial arts and believing it would have taken two solid years of training before he even had a fight, much less go somewhere like the UFC. And ultimately, he decided against it. I definitely would say the right choice he made. But it's interesting that in 2006, that this is kind of the ideas he was having about going into mixed martial arts. And certainly if you're looking for a spectacle, it would have been, because this guy had a much bigger name coming from pro wrestling than Brock Lesnar did, but did not have the wrestling background that a Lesnar did.
Yeah. If you look at his career around 2005, 2006, he had done Doom, which was a flop at the box office. Southland Tales, that a lot of people are not enamored with. And Be Cool, which, you know, didn't light anyone's world on fire. So really back-to-back-to-back movies that weren't box office gold. And then he hit with the Gridiron Gang, which started to get him in the right direction. He did a cameo with Reno 911 Miami. And then, you know, The Game Plan, which was a great one for him. Get Smart. And he started, you know, started to cobble together something. And then he did business with Disney with Race to Witch Mountain in 09. And that kind of, to me, and not that this guy, I think, was in jeopardy through all this. I think that Hollywood loved the guy, and they were just trying to figure out where he is. But you remember, he dropped all that muscle, all that mass on his body. He was so slimmed down for a 5-6 year period. And then he got jacked up again, and it's like, yeah, that's the Rock we fell in love with on SNL. That's what we want here. And he started doing a lot more comedy, kid-friendly programming. Then he did some badass action movies. And I think, you know, really Fast Five and 2011 is where he – didn't look back. I think that movie really solidified him. And then now he's the guy that revives franchises, G.I. Joe, The Fast and the Furious. So, you know, and he just has a great reputation. So I would have been hard to see him in MMA at 34. He's a fan. Never say never. It's just hard to visualize it, but, you know, it's crazy to think. CM Punk, finally he's going to fight. We thought it was going to be in August. It's going to be September 10th. It's going down at UFC 203.
Yep, he announced it on the same podcast. So CM Punk will be fighting Mickey Gall September the 10th in Cleveland. That's the same card that has Stipe Miocic defending the heavyweight title against Alistair Overeem, as well as Ben Rothwell taking on Fabricio Verdum. So this is, to me, a good card to put him on. He's going to be in a support role, but he's going to bring a lot of attention to this card. I think it's going to help this show overall, because Stipe Miocic is not a guy that's going to be doing giant numbers on pay-per-view, so this will help. I think the other option that was UFC 202 with the rematch between Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz didn't need this. This card in September is a better fit, and you know, it's finally going to happen where he's going to have this fight, but he's going to be a notable underdog. Mickey Gall is a very difficult test for a guy that's never had a professional fight before, and he deservedly so will be the favorite in this fight going in. And he looked very good in February in his first UFC fight against Mike Jackson.
It's going to get real for him, and we'll see how it plays out, because I'll be watching that show. If they get to a bonus round with a second fight, awesome. If they don't, interesting.
What does this do on pay-per-view? I mean, we haven't seen the build-up yet. We haven't seen what kind of momentum this will have going into September 10th. So we're a whole summer away from this fight. But is this one that's going to take on a life of its own in the build-up, and this curiosity factor is really going to peak in September?
Hard to know. Hard to say. You know, until you see how it builds and see what the energy is coming off of two massive UFCs this summer and going into there, will it dissipate? Will they still have that momentum? You're coming off two big shows, high profile shows, and if you market it properly, you might have people really excited for the third show. That's another big show with this. They're hoping it's going to be big. They've invested 2+ years in Phil Brooks, CM Punk. I'm curious to see how he handles media as he gets closer and closer. It's gonna be an interesting summer for him, and it's a big summer for UFC. I'm curious to see if and when a deal comes together. I've heard so much about a UFC acquisition by various people. You know, you hear Bob Kraft's name. He owns the New England Patriots. You know, he's throwing maybe $50 million, and then you have China throwing in a ton of money, and Ari Emanuel throwing in a ton of money. I'll be very curious to see if that a conglomerate's a hard thing to keep together, because if all these people, very powerful, successful masters of their universe, coming together to keep that together and be a managing partner of a consortium like that, it's very hard. And to come through a transaction, $4.2 billion transaction of a sports league, that is not an easy cakewalk. So I'm very curious, because you got to do your due diligence on a deal like this, and again, to keep everyone copacetic, and it's gonna be challenging to see how they keep that group together if that's truly the group that ends up acquiring the UFC. We'll see on that one. Speaking of real fights, fake fights.
Oh, by the way, what do you think? I'm looking at the yes? Five Dimes line that is out on Gall and Punk. What kind? Give me a guess of how much you think Mickey Gall is a favorite.
I couldn't even. I don't want to be disrespectful. I have no idea.
It's actually not that crazy. Okay. It's closer than I thought. Mickey Gall is listed as a -300 favorite. Punk is listed at +240, which I thought there would be a bigger discrepancy between.
Yeah, that's gonna be a funky fight. You know, we had a social media fight not too long ago after the classic Will Ospreay controversial. Classic, albeit, match in New Japan with Will Ospreay and Ricochet. And Vader was very outspoken on social media about his beliefs of what a match should and shouldn't be. And Will Ospreay and Vader have been going back and forth. And there was a challenge laid down to face off in the United Kingdom by Will Ospreay. And essentially, Vader has accepted it. So I think we might be seeing in the United Kingdom Big Van Vader versus Will Ospreay at some point later on this summer or early fall. It's an interesting matchup. It's something that people will be very intrigued by. I can't say it's a bad idea. What's your take on Ospreay Vader in 2016?
Is this the first wrestling match that could actually do like a significant amount of online interest based off of Twitter? I mean, this has not off of essentially a handful of tweets. That is what's going to have built this thing. And I feel there will be a lot of curiosity in just seeing this match. I mean, good for them.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. I think it's one of those things, too. It could do really good live pay-per-view business because there's a curiosity factor. There's an impulsive factor. Oh, fuck it. I'm home. I forgot Vader and Ospreay are going to wrestle tonight. It's going to probably not be 5 stars. But, you know, I want to see what the fuck they do. And for a guy like Ospreay, mechanically in a match like that where Vader's now north of 60, bigger dude, works a very specific style in his prime.
If this was 96 Vader and 2016 Will Ospreay, that sounds like an awesome match on paper. You have a great base in Vader to do all of his flying.
Show me the match where Vader was that giving to a guy in this kind of way. Usually he would eat up a guy. So that's where I'm getting at is some guys have a tendency to eat up smaller guys. They have a reputation. Will Vader be generous and show ass or put him over? Probably. We'll see how much he does if they do, in fact, go forward with this match, which it looks like is a done deal. I don't know where it's going to happen, but it's going to happen assumingly somewhere soon. But Will Ospreay, first time he's really going to have to really carry a match in his young career. And there's going to be a lot of pressure because this is how it's been built up by social media. And as a young guy, I mean, a real prodigy in the business, a real deal prodigy, just brilliant. Gifted and just rapidly advancing. This is a good opportunity for him now to figure out how you carry a legend because there's an art to it.
Let's move on because there are some other topics to discuss here. Paige VanZant is booked for her next fight. It was announced on SportsCenter Thursday morning. She'll be fighting Beck Rawlings August 27th in Vancouver, British Columbia on The second of two Fox cards that are going to be happening this summer. There's one in July and then this one at the end of August, which the timeline is important because it's a week after SummerSlam. And I think this would confirm that Paige VanZant is not going to be doing SummerSlam, as her management had been stating that the WWE had been in contact to try and utilize her for the event in Brooklyn.
Yeah. It's again, Ronda to me is the money, and Ronda is the one you hold out for WrestleMania. Paige, yeah, sure, why not? You know, if you had to pick between the two, it's obvious where you go. If you have an opportunity to play with Conor McGregor in your sandbox, another better option. But Paige, sure, why not? But now that's off the table. She was very diplomatic and very flattered by the overtures by WWE to her management. So maybe down the road something will happen. But I'm curious to see how she'd be taken by the or received by the WWE audience, because she's not that big star. She really isn't. She, of course, had her turn on Dancing with the Stars, but it's – I don't know. It's not a guarantee she'd get over, and it's a totally different world. It is in so many ways. They're distant cousins, but in that world it's a totally different thing, and they'd have to find the right opponent. Probably I'd assume Charlotte would be good. But she won't be at SummerSlam. But what's fascinating, just talking a little bit about the schedule and how things have evolved. Money in the Bank, I don't think that show was long enough. I don't know if you would disagree with me.
I was just getting into it when it ended.
I was like, I could stay up all night more. I mean, the last three matches were terrific. They really were. But it looks like SummerSlam and Survivor Series budgeted to be five-hour shows.
Well, I think – you know the deal going in. I think everyone expected that for SummerSlam to reflect what they did last year. What I just don't need more of is pay-per-view overruns, which we got this past Sunday. I hope this was isolated, that they just felt, well, let's put the main event on after Game 7 ends, though I feel that's really silly thinking for an on-demand service. That, I mean, you've got your audience that is watching, and the ones that are predisposed and just want to watch the game are going to watch the game, and if they want to see the main event, they'll come back and watch it. But anyway, I really hope this is not a trend where we get overruns on these pay-per-view events, because these shows are just running too damn long. When you're talking 4+ hours that you are sitting there watching a WWE show,
yeah,
I think
we've
got enough. And it wasn't as if this was just such a blowaway show that we'd fit so much in there. The three matches were what drew everyone in. They all delivered. They all had their time. And all of that could have been done in the regular window.
Agreed. And here's the crazy thing about SummerSlam. You're talking about fatigue watching five-hour shows. Well, just about 30-some-odd days beforehand, they're going to be in the same damn market, because on July 16th, WWE is doing a live event from Madison Square Garden with Seth Rollins challenging the WWE champion, Dean Ambrose. There'll be Neville versus Jericho in an NYC street fight. Why those who are having a street fight right now, I do not know, but maybe we'll know by then. They'll be in a big feud or something. I don't know what's going to happen there. But you're going to have AJ Styles versus John Cena. The tag champs New Day will be there. The Club, Kevin Owens, Sheamus, Mark Henry, Apollo, Flair, and Charlotte, I believe, and Zack Ryder won't be there. Originally were listed as being on the show, but you know, that's a really stacked show right before SummerSlam in the same vicinity as Brooklyn. I mean, that is just a quick little subway ride down over to Brooklyn from the Garden. So they're flooding the same market twice in the same 30-day span, which to me is crazy. But you know, it's New York. They're gonna probably do great in the market regardless, just because it's New York. They do very well typically, and that's a pretty damn stacked card.
Hey, have you seen Ric Flair on the current season of Swerved?
No.
I have not been watching Swerved, but Wei Ting told me I have to watch this clip, and he showed it for me, and it is fantastic. I mean, if you have ever seen Ric Flair, I mean, he is a guy that is he is prone to get angry at times, and it was so obvious he was not in on this, because the skit is him and Charlotte arrive at the building, and Charlotte is on the list and allowed in. Rick is not.
Oh, shit.
And Rick is then told, you're going to have to wait here, and he's not allowed in. At one point, he tries to bypass the security guard, and when the security guy goes to stop him, Rick essentially says, do that at your own risk.
That's awesome.
As if Rick is just going to throw down with the security guard. He moves Rick out.
Yeah.
Rick is still waiting. Then he asks Rick, can you please spell your name again for us? And Rick is just aghast. How the hell do you not know who I am? And Rick, without skipping a beat, goes to spell his name and says, it's spelled F-A-M-O-U-S. Famous.
That's
and
awesome.
And is repeatedly telling the security guy to kiss his ass. Rick walks off. They don't even get to shoot the reveal of this was all a hoax. And at the end, they put a camera in his face, and Rick says, you tried to swerve me, but I'm swerving you. And then he just walked off. And, man, you could tell Rick's blood was boiling here during this scene. And it's the only scene of swerve that I've seen this season, but it was priceless.
You just sold me on actually watching the show. So mission accomplished. But, I mean, there's only one Nature Boy. And, you know, it's to play a rib on him and see him get hot like that. That's tremendous.
Oh, he got hot about it, Corey.
Oh,
he got hot.
I believe it. You know, and just looking at WWE and all the shit they're doing right now, you have Steph who just hopped across the pond to France along with John Cena and Nikki Bella. They are appearing at the Cannes Lions International Festival. Maybe it's Lyon. I don't know. I can't speak French. But they're appearing over there. So Stephanie's
So Cena was in Shanghai last
yes.
week, flies back for the pay-per-view,
Phoenix.
Then flies out to do this. Jesus.
Well, that people wonder, why do they stay with Cena? Why? That is why.
Well,
this guy has made a fortune for you, and he's made a fortune for himself through all that hard work, and he's doing that. I can't name a top star that wouldn't have told Vince, go fuck yourself. But John Cena ain't like anyone else. I'm covering everyone over the 70s, 80s, 90s. John Cena is what Vince McMahon has looked for his whole life as a promoter. He loves John Cena. He knows that John Cena is never going to embarrass him, or he's going to represent the company to the best of his abilities. And
he's their LeBron James.
No. LeBron James isn't. LeBron James is brilliant, but at the same time, in terms of
has LeBron gone? Look at this guy's had a spotlight on him. His entire career. Has he ever messed up in public?
That's what I'm saying. LeBron, I can tell you, if you ask people in Cleveland, he has. Cena, he never sweats. I mean, he's smooth. And the fact that he learned Mandarin for a very specific reason, like last week, was basically why he did it. To speak Mandarin, not easy. And to be committed on top of training, traveling, having a real life, doing promotion, doing charity, wrestling, doing media appearances, doing outside projects. I mean, the guy is wired in a way that no one else is wired in the WWE or elsewhere. I mean, he's built himself an amazing legacy, and I think there's still more great to come. And I know it sounds like I'm rah-rahing John Cena, but he has worked hard, and he earned that.
Maybe he'll get his own special when he decides he's going to leave WWE.
Listen.
The decision.
I don't know if he'll ever leave WWE. I really think he'll have some sort of loose affiliation regardless. You know, there's always a falling out. But so far, this guy's had been with the company without any bumps in the road for a decade and a half, almost two decades. Very rare. You know, Undertaker's one of the guys that's been around for a very long period of time. But very few guys, top guys. Not I'm talking those guys who just sneak by and they're undercard guys and they're jobbed out for two decades. No, top guys stay around that long. Kane, Shawn Michaels even took a sabbatical. Triple H star 95. But those are the few. And, you know, it says a lot. But the guy's a stud, and there's no two ways about it. And, you know, just talking a little bit about the podcast from Monday night, the quote-unquote podcast, the Steve Austin Show on the network with AJ Styles, I thought that Steve Austin put over AJ Styles possibly better than anyone the company has in the ring with how he put him out there on the show. He put him over. If you watch it back, you'll watch the little ways he put him over. He really added to his credibility. He built AJ up. He set him up to answer questions that would make him shine. He did a masterful job, in my opinion, of putting the guy over. And AJ gave perfect answers.
I thought AJ was great. I thought it was I didn't watch it on Monday night. I was doing the show with Way
Very
after.
Very disappointed that you're not committed to watching it right after Raw. Very disappointed.
Oh, look at this. We have some breaking news from Dave Meltzer.
Dave? What is it?
Yeah.
I thought he was with us.
Okay, headline. It's damn true. Kurt Angle not coming back to WWE. So here is what is written. Amid speculation that many former WWE stars have been approached with returning to the company due to the upcoming brand split, the possibility that free agent Kurt Angle could be one of those talents got some fans excited. Unfortunately for those fans, that will be an unrealized dream as WWE officials confirmed on Thursday that Angle is not returning to the company. The story started when Angle was on Mark Madden's Pittsburgh show on Monday and said that Paul Levesque had called him, but that no deal was in place. Although nobody officially said it, the story grew to a point where people said that a deal was done with a start date even listed. The 47-year-old wrestler finished up his TNA contract in March and has been working select indie dates with recent matches against the likes of Rey Mysterio and Zack Sabre Jr. Angle's contract with WWE ended in August 2006. So the WWE is saying no return.
So, circling back to our original discussion.
Was it a wise move to go publicly with his whatever discussions, or was this ultimately a dead end to begin with?
Like I said, maybe you had a conversation, things go idle for a bit, and you're trying to jumpstart it, and you put it out there in the public forum. It's a game of chance. What's gonna happen? It compelled WWE to have a strong, definitive message to the public about their position in doing business with Kurt Angle in 2016. 10 years have passed since he left the company. I was there when he left the company. I can tell you it was an uncomfortable situation. He's a very talented guy. He was an amazing, amazing contributor and very generous to the young guys and putting them over, and just an incredible performer, athlete that just has an uncanny threshold for pain. But at this point, at 47, I don't know what his next steps are. He really didn't seem like he wanted to do much wrestling. He wanted to take the year to enjoy life at home with his family. And we had seen him recently. He competed for Rev Pro in the UK against Zack Sabre Jr. What a great deal that was. Maybe his future is doing select dates like that, you know, for the right price and transitioning to a different position within the business, or maybe there's an opportunity for him to do something in MMA as in that old Bill Goldberg Elite XC role, where, you know, a guy that's an aficionado that has some star power in the broadcast booth. I think Kurt actually would be possibly better in this position, but we'll see what's next for Kurt. That opportunity seems to now be behind him. I doubt TNA can afford him. I don't know if he really has any interest in going to TNA. New Japan would, again, make me uncomfortable. I guess we'll see. A guy like that in Lucha Underground. He loves working with Rey Mysterio. They did that UR fight, and Rey loves working with him. They could do that match in their sleep. That would be a
maybe he's the monster that is working with Lorenzo Lamas to come back and feud with Matanza.
You know, Kurt on a very limited schedule at the Temple and Lucha Underground might be interesting. I mean, they need people to pump up that product, to go out there and talk it up and go to major markets and talk it up, make people aware of the channel and of the product. And you can't just put it on Rey Mysterio and Mundo and the few stars they do have that can do that, that people actually want to book to put on their show. Kurt could do that. And I don't know. I just don't know what's next for Kurt. I don't know if Kurt wants to work over there, but that would be an interesting scenario, just because I know Ray loves working with him, and he loves working with Ray. And if they have money to spend, and that's a question only they can answer. That's an interesting scenario because they need a little boost, because we look at the ratings. We've talked about the ratings. They're not going in the right direction, and there's a lot of reasons for that.
Not enough Lorenzo Lamas and Dario Cueto, who, for my money, have the best on-screen chemistry of anyone in pro wrestling at the moment.
Dario Cueto, though, I mean, you and I could talk to Dario Cueto, would be compelling because he's so good. He makes others just better. He's amazing. He's one of the great finds of the last few years. Let's be honest.
Yes.
He is.
And I'm not being sarcastic about Lorenzo Lamas. Right. I think he's great, too. I think both of them together. I mean, these are actual actors that are clearly engaged in what they're doing, and it comes across very well. And you're right, Dario Cueto, where they great hire, a completely non-known name to wrestling fans, and that's why it works so well.
It does.
And he's so different from the typical trope of the heel owner.
Damn right. And just a really special guy. I mean, and he's really good. Just it's amazing, too, because his background, he's not even Mexican. He's from Spain. And to come over here, and he's been trying to find roles and stuff, and he's really talented. He was on a Super Bowl commercial, I think we talked about several months ago. But he's really found like this cult following, you know, with doing the character for Lucha Underground. And he really is kind of the heart and soul. He's the most compelling character. Whenever he's on air or on screen, you're not going to have me looking at my phone. I'm going to be looking at that TV, and I'm compelled to see what he's going to do. Masterful performance. One take wonder, too. I've seen him in action. You don't need to do multiple takes with that guy. He gets it. He nails it, and you know he got it. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to check out Lucha Underground, Dario Cueto, you might come to check out the Luchadors. You might stay for Dario Cueto. He's that good, but the wrestling's really good there too. And good wrestling maybe tonight because Ring of Honor has a pay-per-view on a Friday night. What's your take on tonight's Best in the World card live from – somewhere in North Carolina. I have no idea where. Concord, maybe?
Yes, Concord, North Carolina.
Charlotte, why go to a big market? Let's go to Concord. No disrespect to Concord. Just to me, you want to do pay-per-views in big markets. But
wow, you're really vilifying yourself here to the audience listening in Concord. I think that this is, on paper, this looks like a very good card. The television is mainly focused on BJ Whitmer and Steve Corino having their fight without honor. And you look at the rest of this card, I think Kyle O'Reilly and Kamatachi, that should be great.
Yes.
And Jay Lethal and Jay Briscoe is interesting. They're doing it a year later after Lethal beat Briscoe to win the title. But you go off the last pay-per-view where Adam Cole was so positioned that he almost had to be in the main event. And of course, he is dealing with pneumonia, actually. So he's not even on this card. I don't even know if he'll be appearing or not.
You know what's so weird? I know like three people in the business right now with pneumonia. It's like such a weird time to get pneumonia. You think usually in the winter, but three people in the wrestling business with pneumonia right now.
So it should be a very good card. Daniels and Kazarian against the Motor City Machine Guns for the tag titles. We have Moose and War Machine against the – oh, sorry. This is where Adam Cole is listed. Right. They had announced the six-man that Cole is teaming with the Bucks mm-hmm. against Moose and War Machine. So Cole did not work the most recent shows because of the pneumonia, but presumably he will be on this card in the six-man. So I expect another very strong show, and I don't really know what they're doing on pay-per-view, like how these shows – I mean, they're – they seem to be doing more and more pay-per-views that you would figure that they have found a certain level of buys that they're getting, and these are shows that are making money for them. And this one certainly had more television focus than the last show, which was essentially the New Japan guys are coming, this is the card, but there were not really much in the way of storylines building up that show.
It was uninspired. It was lazy. I look at this show, and They don't have a lot of buzz, straight up. They just don't have a buzz. They have great talent, but they don't have buzz. They don't shoot angles to create buzz. They don't shoot angles to create money angles or money business. They do good matches, but that's it. And so as a promotion, it benefits you to do those things, to generate buzz, to get interest, to go beyond the core audience, and that core audience is able to, I guess, keep them doing these pay-per-views. But I don't sense without the New Japan injection of star power and that special attraction vibe when they come to town that they truly are growing the business month to month without them. But, you know, this is a very good card, but are they going to be able to cut those big angles to make their product better? I don't know. We'll see. They did the thing with the Bullet Club. To me, but personally, the Bullet Club's very long in the tooth. It just – I call it something else, whatever, and do the same angle, and it's a little bit more attractive to me. Great talent involved, but Bullet Club to me at this point is in WWE, and what's left over is not that. Young Bucks and Omega as the elite feel like their own little thing. So, you know, where they're headed in a very competitive market just to put on good matches but not have the overall product where you have – these sexy storylines, the TV's more episodic, there isn't, to have well-rounded, very well-packaged characters. it's too competitive to not do those things. When you have NXT that's very accessible, that's built into your network subscription, if you have the WWE, they're competitively priced as far as tickets go. The event experience is really incredible for NXT. Then you have possibly Lucha Underground touring this fall. You have a very competitive place even on the indie level with PWG. You know, you're talking about all the competition. Now you have two rosters in WWE. There's just a lot. And just being good at matchmaking, having good talent is enough. You have to be clicking across the board. And that's something Ring of Honor's got to really find a way to just elbow themselves in there without New Japan. New Japan's great, but you can't be New Japan / Ring of Honor all the time.
Also, as we wind things down for another week of Bauer and Pollock, we should touch on this. There was this weird story coming out of Las Vegas Sunday night involving Paige and Alberto Del Rio, who, Court, you spoke to about what this incident was. I contacted the Las Vegas Police Department about the issue in question here, and they stated that there was no arrest, no charges are forthcoming, and that medical attention was summoned, and the woman, which they did not identify by name, was transported to a local hospital. So, I mean, she was back on television, that being Paige, who the photos surfaced of on Monday. She was on Raw that night, and it seems like this story is done with. I think it's, you know, they've commented on the matter, and that's about it. But if you didn't hear MLW Radio earlier this week, you spoke directly to Alberto, who gave his side of what occurred when both of them were out Sunday night.
I did, and you can go back and look at MLW 232 from Tuesday and around the 9-minute mark if you don't want to hear all of our bullshit, is when we talk in depth about it. But just in the aftermath of something like this where there's so many disturbing stories that were completely bullshit, you know, that really does have an impact on people. When you're a wrestler and you're in the public eye, yes, you do absolutely sign up. You know what you're getting into. You should know what you're getting into when you sign up to be a public figure in a sense. And the scrutiny, the abuse you take because you are in the public domain, you're putting yourself out there as a athlete, as a star. And at the same time, though, when there's these horrible stories that have no merit to them, no truth to them, that just, you know, it's and I'm not like outing anyone as who – I don't even know who came up with them. I really don't know. It became like this chatter on Twitter. And it just sucks because then you have people like even family members hitting them up like, is this true? Please tell us just the truth. And it's like, no, everything's fine. We're here. We're here in Phoenix. Everything's completely cool. It was just these assholes that got drunk and they got confrontational and they handled it, you know, Alberto and Paige handled it the proper way. They had security remove them. And then when, these people were waiting outside and they accosted Paige, police got involved and they did what the police should do in that situation. They, got to the bottom of it and, made sure that there was peace on the streets, and then Paige and Alberto went down the road to Phoenix after what should have been a romantic night was disrupted by these fools. And then because we live in an age where, you know, people take pictures with their phones, people then put a narrative to the pictures, and then you know, various things are reported. Some things just completely fabricated by just random anonymous people on social media or otherwise websites. And it becomes such a big fucking thing, and it becomes a nightmare for these people, and they're living having to tell family members, oh no, there's no, I don't even want to dignify the rumors, it's so ridiculous, but that's what they had to live with Tuesday into Wednesday, and that really can take its toll and upset, you know, people. And I, you know, and I'll say Alberto, you know, it's tough to, he ain't rattled, but you know, for poor Paige, that's a lot, you know, I don't want to like play the violin for Paige, but it sucks, you know, it sucks when people put you in a position where you have to defend yourself from something you had nothing that like that occurred. So it's disheartening, but again, it's what you sign up for when you get into this. And that sounds like a cop out, but it's just the realities. There's a lot of great that comes from fame. There's a lot of wonderful things, including the money, the fortune, the success, the popularity, being a celebrity, the hero worship that can occur that some people get off on, going out there and hearing the pop and doing those matches and being forever remembered for them. But then there's instances like this where it just takes the wind out of your sails. So, you know, I'm glad the whole story came out. I think some people did some really good reporting on it as well. I don't want to condemn all the reports. There was really good reports out there as well. And so now we have the full story. It's a non-issue now. But just to give some perspective, you know, it does take its toll on people, and it sucks that they had to be subjected to something so cruel as what the bullshit stories that people were pumping out there over Monday and Sunday and into Tuesday. So, you know, it is what it is, but I'm glad it's behind them, and none of that bullshit was true.
On a lighter note,
yes.
If Paige Van Zandt had worked SummerSlam,
oh God,
would she have had to change her name?
I thought you were going to do Paige versus Paige.
No, oh, you can't do that. That'd be too confusing.
Well, it just makes me think back to when Mike Goldberg was possibly going to come in 2005, and it's like, can't have two Goldbergs, even though Bill's gone for a year. He had to change Mike Goldberg's name. Let's come up with some options. Mike Smith.
What were some options? Mike Smith.
Mike Lawrence.
It would. How about an ode to the former world class announcer and call him Mike Lawrence?
Mr. St. Laurent would have been upset with that one.
Oh, okay. That is going to bring an end to this show. But Court,
yes.
The shows never stop being churned out. What is coming your way? Our way. Everyone's way.
Dusty Rhodes, part two, history in the making. We go through the 1980s into 2015, looking back at the one-of-a-kind run of Dusty Rhodes and his impact on the business. We talk about the Horsemen, the WWF era, his first meeting with Vince McMahon after a decade and a half in 2005. I was there for it, and I can go over it in detail, and I do, on the new History in the Making podcast that just dropped on Thursday, yesterday. That's a VIP-only subscription. Go to mlwradio.com, click on the red button, and for just $1.99, you get all of our VIP shows and access to all of our archives. It's a great deal. And coming up, we have a very special show, a free writer's room, part one, with Dave Bautista next Wednesday. This is appointment podcasting, my friends, because he's not pulling any punches about his thoughts on where he used to work, WWE, and his take on his experiences there, his last run there. And he's very, very forthcoming. And there's going to be some interesting revelations that people aren't aware of during the last chapter of his run there.
Oh, boy.
And he does that show, that podcast, with Alex Greenfield, former head writer, a guy that Dave worked with extensively at WWE. And I heard a bit of part one today. And I was blown away. And so part one drops on Wednesday. And this one's going to be a free one. We're giving everyone a freebie next week. The Writers' Room, you don't want to miss that. MLWradio.com. And then Jim Cornette just did like an epic show with Jim Ross talking Mid-South Wrestling, Jim's efforts to do a film project of all things, and a lot more. It's a fun show. Whenever you get Corny and JR together, just sit back and enjoy the ride. Those two are, have incredible chemistry. And so we had them. We have Santino Marella doing a podcast with MVP this past week in the VIP lounge. Haku was with Tama Tonga for part two of their conversation. So we have an eclectic bunch of podcasts on MLW Radio Network right now with some very interesting luminaries. But that's what's going on over here at MLWradio.com. What's going on over in your neck of the woods?
Well, a hell of a plug from you, Court Bauer. That might have been your finest to date.
It's that Mexican Coca-Cola, man.
Well, up at liveaudiowrestling.com, we have a review this week. Wei Ting was away, so Jordan Breen of SureDog.com joined me, and we reviewed Halloween Havoc 1990. What a show that was.
I love that show. Steiner's Nasty Boys, my favorite.
Well, there is some great stuff on that show. There's also some awful stuff in the form of the Black Scorpion.
I love that angle. Oh, my God. Come on. Come on.
This guy used to be in creative, folks.
Now you got me hot.
There is a great Steiner's match with the Nasty Boys. Maybe the best match of the Nasty Boys' career. I would go so far as to say.
Sullivan and Cactus had a pretty fun match with them. I think it was Sullivan and Cactus back in 94. But 1990 Halloween Havoc, that was a competitive match. That was a badass, kick-ass match. And that was like one of the last matches, the brief cameo Nasty Boys had in WCW before they moved on in early 91 to WWF, which was, you know, where they actually had a really nice run. But That was a fun – I wish we had more of that, Steiners and Nasties. That could have been a fun thing, but it was kind of a one-and-done deal.
Yep, and some fun commentary dynamics between Jim Ross and Paul E. Dangerously dressed as Dracula. So you can catch that review, and then we've got episodes of What's Next – the MMA Report, which is coming out on Friday, featuring Josh Gross, who's just written the new book, Ali versus Inoki.
Great book.
As this is the 40th anniversary this week of the fight between Ali and Inoki. And then we'll be back Sunday night with The Law, live audio wrestling at 11 Eastern. You can listen live at liveaudiowrestling.com. Subscribe on iTunes. And we also have our YouTube channel at YouTube. Man, gonna cut off my own plug here.
Don't get hot at me. Jesus, I was just excited. I was about to put over your MMA report because Josh Gross in his book has a great Vince McMahon Sr., some great Vince McMahon Sr. story. So even if you're not an MMA fan, don't care about Inoki and Ali, just for the Vince McMahon Sr. stories alone, it's worth the read.
Yeah, there's a ton in that book about just how this fight was put together, and in particular, Bob Arum working with Vince McMahon Sr. And Bob Arum wouldn't even speak to Josh Gross about this book because of how he holds this fight in his memory.
Wow.
Think about that. Bob Arum just doesn't even want to revisit 1976 Ali Inoki. But there you go. YouTube.com/liveaudiowrestling. Court's going over there right now to rewatch Review a Raw. And the two of us will be back next week. This show drops each and every Friday. It's Bauer and Pollock. And now Court is going to go finish his cola.
Well, here's what it is. AJ stole a victory last night, and he didn't want to see that victory negated by losing to Cena tonight. He's trying to save face, trying to protect himself. That's what it is.
Certainly sure of yourself there, Bob.
Yeah, you're right. I am.
Bit testy here as John Cena again looks back.
Don't get hot. I didn't make you wear that green shirt last night.